Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
I'm Molly Tamarkin. I'm from Duke University, and I'm the Associate University Librarian for Information Technology there.
I'm here with my comrades in the Kuali Ole Project, Robert McDonald and Mike Winkler. Robert is from Indiana University, and I think he has the longest job title ever. Can you share that with the audience, please?
Just Associate Dean for Library Technologies usually works.
Okay. Yeah. It's quite long, and I think it might have URLs embedded in it. And Mike Winkler.
It has its own watch and map.
Yeah. Hashtags, you know. And Mike is with the University of Pennsylvania, and you are the
Director of Information Technologies and Digital Development for the University Libraries.
All right. So we've all managed technology in the libraries. We're going to talk to you this morning about the Kuali Ole Project, where the project has only been going on for probably about 2 years. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about this morning is our governance and the history and some of the challenges we're facing. Not a lot about the technical details at this point, but more to come. Let me begin with,
Yes.
Is that right? Oh, should I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Robert set this up just a few minutes ago. If you want to try Wafidi, we will aggregate questions to using Twitter or text messages. If you want to note that at the end, we'll bring that screen up and we can address your questions there. Or, of course, you can always communicate verbally, face to face, since
which
you are
here.
We
do encourage.
But sometimes that's scary.
Yes.
And when you is that when you do the text to that, it gives you a weird identity?
That's right. It gives you a made-up name once you text it, so it's kind of interesting. But it'll come back to your text on your phone, and then you can tell what your question is up there. But the whole idea there is to let you put in your questions as you think about them as we're going along, and that way we can come back to them, or you can just raise your hand since this is a small group, and we do want participation.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. All right. So how did this project start? This project started in 2008. With an invitation from the Mellon Foundation to Duke University to lead a planning phase or design phase for to explore creating an integrated library system, a community source ILS. This was a year-long phase led by Lynn O'Brien at Duke, and we had over 35 workshops, 500-plus people attending these workshops to really explore the business processes in library transactions and library work. We were had representation from throughout the U.S. as well as Australia. And the question for this phase, or the hypothesis really, was would a community source integrated library system be a good idea? And it was possible to say no at the end of this. And another reaction might be, don't we already have that? Why do we need another one? And if you look at the higher education environment and throughout and look at what is already in the market, I think at the end of the conclusion at the end of the phase was that yes, we do need another one. We need one that works in our environment and that can connect to enterprise systems and that can scale to the level that we need. So at the end of the design phase that was in July of 2009, we submitted a concluding report to Mellon, and then in the fall of 2009 went into a build phase. We submitted a proposal to Mellon to build the system. This is a two-year project. For the build phase, we partnered with seven universities who helped in the design phase. This phase is now being led by Indiana University, and here are our partners. We've all contributed cash and staff. Mellon has also contributed funding. The actual development of the system is going to come from a software development company. So we're not you know, crowdsourcing the development, but we are all putting in time and effort and cash to the planning, designing the functionality, workflows, et cetera. Here are our partners. There's Duke, University of Maryland, Indiana, Lehigh, Michigan, Chicago, University of Pennsylvania, University of Florida, North Carolina State, and Lehigh. Duke and North Carolina State, we're representing the Triangle Research Libraries Network, a consortium, and University of Florida is also representing a Florida consortium. All right, so now I think we're going to talk about the governance. Yeah?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about just, you know, how we got going with Kuali Olay and how we kind of went from the Olay project, which was our planning stage that Molly had just spoken about a little bit, into joining the Kuali Foundation and really becoming an application partner with them on what we're doing with the open library environment. One of the big things we did, and this was one of the things that I worked on in particular during our planning phase with Joe Zucca from University of Pennsylvania, and I really owe a lot to Joe on looking at business models because that's one of the things he does for Penn a lot in a lot of different ways, very broad, high-level overviews, not only from library budgets and IT budgets, from a lot of different things. And one of the things we realized right away was that we really needed to find that business plan first so that we could look for something that was a sustainable IT project for, you know, I think at a minimum 10 years and possibly longer depending on, you know, the success and how it helps academic libraries overall. And from that, we realized we needed matching funds and matching FTE. And when we started looking around, we realized that, you know, having a 501c3 organizational structure, which, you know, that's just the IRS code for, you know, being a nonprofit and being able to manage funds in a central location and have a board and have a charter. You know, that was important to us because we wanted it to be community supported and community governed. And the big question that it came down to when we discussed this was whether we were going to build our own. And, we, you know, at the time, we had talked to lots of folks who had been doing that. We talked to JSIG, who had already created one. We talked to Sakai, who was, you know, kind of thinking about that idea. We talked to a few folks with what now is DuraSpace. Back then, it was the DSpace Foundation and the Fedora Foundation. And they, at the time, had just started talking to each other about merging together. And, you know, so we saw from, you know, from all of those discussions that, you know, did we really want to build our own or do we want to find one that, you know, we really had, you know, allied interests that we wanted to join? And so the more we looked at this, the more we thought that finding one with the correct allied interests would be the way to go for us. And so we talked to several established ones that were thinking about pulling in other types of allied applications, you know, what that overhead would be, how much, you know, that would top out at, and whether, you know, this would be feasible for us to do. And this was one of the linchpin things, I think, in moving ahead, because we realized at the end of our report that we had enough academic libraries who were interested in doing this. And one of the reasons I think they were interested in this, and this was something that Greg Jackson with EDUCAUSE has brought up a couple of times when we've talked to him about library systems. He's like, you know, you guys really own your own library systems, you know, when you had Notice before it was kind of sold off. And then even after it was sold off, libraries had the opportunity to form a consortium and kind of buy the code back. And that didn't quite happen at the time, you know, I think because everybody was looking at how that technology stack for Notice would have to change drastically to move forward. And, you know, I'm not sure all those reasons behind it, but every time we've talked to him about it, I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, we were on the verge of that before, and now, you know, we definitely saw that people were interested in doing it. But our key questions there were about the administrative overhead for joining that kind of established organization, and could the Olay partners share funds for short and long-term sustainability? And what we meant by that was, could we take funds that we knew we wanted to invest here, whether it be contributed FTE, whether it be you know, actual cash funds, or any other kind of components that we want to invest in the long-term strategy for Olay, pull them in a place and be able to move those out to partner institutions without a lot of overhead? Because That's going to be critical. And I don't, you know, I work a lot with grant-funded research with lots of partner organizations outside of my own. And, you know, that's one of the things that always is critical to find out right away is what that overhead cost is going to be once you divide it up 10 ways, right? And so we realized that our overhead needed to be low, and that was one of the key things we needed there. And the other big piece was, would there be long-term support for the software dissemination? You know, some place that would be a trusted broker that would have the, you know, the open code and would be able to make it available even if, you know, say we hit our 10-year mark, we get our investment back out of our software and there's something better that comes along and we want to move on. You know, anyone that's adopted along the way is going to be able to get that open code and have it made available for the long term. So those were some of our key, I guess, core principles in looking at all of this as we were planning to move from the Olay planning project to the QualiOlay, what QualiOlay is now in terms of moving forward. So we liked what we saw with the Quali Foundation, not only because they really had strong business plans for the applications that they were putting together, but we also liked how they did governance in terms of each application having their own board. We have our own board for Olay. The co-chairs right now are Deborah Jacobs, who is the Dean of Libraries and Vice Provost at Duke University, and Brad Wheeler, who is the Vice President for Information Technology and CIO at Indiana University. We have an executive director, which is the spot that I'm holding right now with Olay, and you know, a lot of that is about working with the community, engaging the community, and looking at future partners to come in that want to switch to Olay, and working with not only those partners, but with industry and the commercial affiliates for the Quali Foundation in terms of places that may want to run services for Olay for individual academic library customers later on. We have a functional council, which Mike Winkler chairs, and the whole goal of that functional council is to make sure that the specifications we put forward for the coding to the developers matches the needs of the overarching group of partners that comprise Olay. And that's, you know, one of the key components of all of the applications that reside under the umbrella of the Quali Foundation is that those partners invested either the cash funds or the contributed FTE. And those are the folks who really make the rules in terms of the functionality for the product. You know, and I've been asked this by other folks who are interested in running Olay, you know, and I explained to them over and over again that is, you know, the kind of community source ethic that comes into play with what we're doing here. Our software is going to be open, and you're free to run it and do whatever you want to with it. But in terms of driving the direction of it through our own community, it's that key group that's putting that together, that's setting up the servers, that's going to host that code for the long term. And that's a key part of the functional council. The technical council is basically one person from each partner site who's heavily familiar with their own technical infrastructure and is looking at the technology stack that we're putting together and making sure that it can run in their own environments and that it can run both in a standalone fashion as well as in an enterprise kind of managed way. The core project team at Indiana University right now, most of them are managed by Brad Skiles, who's our project manager. And there's about five folks under Brad. It's a lightweight team, and it's really there to transfer the knowledge back from our software development vendor directly into the partner sites in terms of knowing, you know, what's going on with Q&A, with the code, how we're managing it, how we're distributing it back out to the partners for testing, and how we're doing automated testing with that code as well. And this is just a little bit of an overview. I explained up front what we have involved with Olay, but this is a very large-scale overview which shows all of the Quali applications. So there's Quali Financial, Quali COEUS for research administration, Quali Student, which is a student system. Then there's the Quali Library Environment. There's the Business Continuity and Planning, sometimes known as Quali Ready. And so you'll see all of these application stacks. They all have their own individual boards. And that's the green up here. They all have functional councils. They all have project management of some sort. They all have development teams and subject matter experts. And the subject matter experts are really key. And those are all distributed out both from the functional technical councils. And that's to get more and more knowledge from each local partner's site about either how they're going to run the technical side of things or are they covering the correct functional specifications to move forward to the developers. And you'll see that what really is shared here with the foundation down in this bottom part is the board and a lightweight set of operations, and that's where that overhead goes to. But you know, you've got to have it
in terms of legal services, financial management, licensing, collaboration, infrastructure. We do all of our collaboration across all the applications is set up in a really nice application on Google Apps. And it pulls together the best of Google Apps with Confluence and Jira and allows us all to communicate really well and share documents really well. And it's that kind of lightweight support that you need to really get all of this off the ground, and it's something that really helped Olay get off the ground quickly in terms of managing all that, because it already existed, right? They just said, okay, here's the Olay instance of that. You guys can use this for this and this for this. And, you know, it's not like anyone's dictating that. If we want to try something different, we can do that. But, you know, there's been great success with finance and good success with student and COIS. And so we really like that model, not only from a business standpoint, but also from a governance and collaborative side. So that's what we're doing. Now, here's just a little bit on Qualia Olay governance itself. We have our own board, like I said, with our co-chairs. We have our project manager, Brad Skiles, our technical counsel, and our functional counsel. And then under that is Brad's core team in the purple that's at IU. And on each side, we have the subject matter experts feeding into this based on the not only the long-term roadmap and planning piece that we're planning for the next 2 years, but also around any technical and specification documents. Like an example of that is we're having a user story summit in North Carolina coming up that is just a very small core team of subject matter experts that are pulling together the thousands of user stories that were generated by our Olay core members teams, and they're going to start honing that out to build the first round of functional specifications for the system. Now, here's just a little bit about Olay governance for the team that's at IU, and it's very interesting. It's a great collaborative model, and it's one we're trying out to see that, you know, if there's other projects that end up running like this, hosted at IU, we definitely want to try this. So the project's jointly managed by myself, the Associate Dean for Library Technologies, and our Associate Vice President for Enterprise Software, Barry Walsh. Basically by that, Brad Skiles, our project manager, reports jointly to both of us. We work at it from different angles, and it really gives Brad both the full support in terms of what enterprise software has to bear at IU, as well as the full access to all the subject matter experts that he needs at the library and any other support that we can jointly provide from either area. And it's really been wonderful working this way, and we already had an established relationship with enterprise software in that we run the main library management system for all of IU's campuses through enterprise software in a joint reporting relationship already. And this has just solidified that and really made us realize that this is something we should have looked at a long time ago in terms of being more effective for running more academic enterprise types of software across the organization. But you'll see there, it's the same kind of diagram that I had in the last one, except one of the things that we're really doing different with Olay is in having this programming contract. And, you know, it's something that I think we got the idea from first from the Mellon Foundation in talking with Ira Fuchs and Chris Mackey when we were doing our planning piece. But what we really saw there was it's great to have contributed FTE and programming resources, and lots of the other projects have been successful that way. And eventually, that's what we want to do for maintenance of the product. But in terms of getting the product out the door, being able to have a contract where they can, you know, bring to bear up to 30 programmers, you know, almost overnight if you need them, if you have the functional specifications to drive it, that can go up and down at the burn rate that you need. And having that flexibility, I think, is going to really help us, get this software out in the two-year time frame we've got set. I truly believe we'll be able to hit our marks on that because of this contract. And one of the great things about this contract is the firm we're working with, they're actually putting the project coordinator and one of their key lead developers in Bloomington with our team, with our other lightweight core team, to help drive this process over the two-year timetable. And so just to reiterate, you know, a little bit about that, we found a business model that we liked in the Qualia Foundation. We found lots of the lightweight support components that were going to bring our project together, you know, so to speak, be the collaborative glue. And in the same time, we started looking for, parts of our technology, and we found that with the Rice middleware that currently exists, and Rice is the middleware for the Qualia Foundation, that it gave us an academic enterprise service bus with all the attributes that go along with that, And we said, why not take advantage of that? They've already looked at how that works for an ERP system and a finance system within, you know, management of an academic system. They've already looked at that in terms of a student system. And we saw that other people were using it in addition to things like PeopleSoft to do document workflow. And guess what? Most library work really is about being flexible with workflow, except that our current ILSs aren't always so flexible with that workflow. And that's where we want to get with our vendor over time to be able to develop modular workflows for a set cost. And that way we can come back to our community and say, okay, we need this, you know, type of workflow. We don't currently have it. Here's the set cost it'll take. And, you know, most of these, I think, once our team is up to speed, would only take, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 months to create. And we know a set price on that, so we could take that back out to the community and say, if you're interested in this, here's what it costs. Here's how many people are interested. Let's divide it up. Let's move forward. And so with that, you get those three components, and that makes up QualiOLE. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike to talk a little bit about our startup phase, which, of course, that's the name of our topic today, library startup. So.
Thanks, Robert. So I just wanted to – how do I go back? So I like this. This is a community source map. Kind of tough on a Friday morning. But so we've been running for Molly pointed out that the project's been going for about 2 years. So there are two phases to the project. There was the design phase that was led by Duke University, where we really looked out to see whether it was feasible to do this, whether it was desirable to do this. And we heard back that, yes, it was. And then we went, made a proposal to Mellon and got funded in July, in July 2010. So we've only been up and running in this part, this build phase, for 4 months. And I wanted to go through a little bit of what we've been doing in those 4 months. So as my colleagues have talked about, we've got funding from the Mellon Foundation, but partners also put in about an equal amount of cash, in fact. And a lot of this was to get buy-in, was to make sure that the partners had a real stake in this, that they had put money on the table. It's not just some in-kind contributions where, oh, yes, you can have a half-time FTE programmer or something like that, but substantial cash was put into the project to fund it. And we were able to develop a budget out of that is funding that core team that Robert talked about and helping us contract with those outsourced programmers as well. So it was very important to get that kind of cash behind us because we wanted to make sure that we could move as quickly as possible through the project. So we've been building our teams quite a bit. This is a big activity of what's going on. The board came together for the first time in December of 2009 for its first meeting, and they've had two face-to-face meetings at this point. And they're really driving the vision. They're helping us understand exactly where we're going to go and where at the end of this process we need to be in order to get to fulfill that vision. We put together our functional council. We meet practically every week to discuss how to move forward on getting the specifications written into the core team so that they can turn them into technical specifications that will go to the programmers. We've had two face-to-face meetings, and we're about to have our third one in about two and a half weeks.
At Quali Days 2010 in San Diego.
A nice little plug there. San Diego in November. That sounds nice. Our technical council is just coming together, and they will be helping us understand the technology stack, but as Robert pointed out very importantly, they're there to help us understand whether what the software that we're creating, the infrastructure that we're creating, whether that will work at those partner institutions. So it's sort of a check and balance there to make sure that we're not going too far afield and then have partners say, well, I can't do this. And all of that staff, the board, the functional councils, and technical council are being drawn from the partners. So that's our in-kind contribution of staff, and it's a substantial commitment, as you can imagine. We have members on each of those bodies from each of the institutions, and then there's some additional advisors, that sort of stuff. And then there's the subject matter experts that are out there as well. So altogether, we probably at each institution involved anywhere from, you know, 8 to 20 librarians and librarian staff, library staff in this process. And we're only 4 months old. We've also been working very hard on hiring our core team. The core team is a critical part of the architecture. So you can kind of see it as it's a hierarchy. There's the functional and technical councils that are drawn from the partnership who are developing the functional specifications. They're really saying, so what should this software do? The technical councils are helping us understand whether if the software is built in particular ways, can it be implemented at the partner sites? These specifications get handed off to the core team. So this is Brad Skiles' team, where we have a project manager, we have a data architect, a technical architect, we have a business analyst, and we have quality assurance manager and a configuration manager will be part of all of that team. So we're trying to hire up all of those people right now, and again, you know, interviews take a while to do, so that's been taking a lot of our time here in the first 4 months. Additionally, so the functional council, as I said, meets every week or so, and a lot of our activity revolves around this next bullet item of building the plan. So there was this design project that went on for a year, and out of it came a high-level document, a planning document that said this is what Kwale-Ole could be, or this is what Ole could be. So under Kwale-Ole, we've been taking that good work and really going in a deep dive, getting at a lower altitude to really begin understanding, so what does this mean? So we've been developing our data model, and one of the things that we recognized early on from the feedback from the community that we were getting from our own experiences with library systems is that there's a lot of data out there that libraries deal with, and that one of the issues that we've had with our traditional ILS systems is that they're somewhat rigid in how they deal with that data. So when new formats come along, rather than fitting them into the core product, what we would typically see is that new products would be spun off for, of course, additional cost. So we wanted to make sure that whatever we did with Kwale-Ole, with the data model, it would be able to handle a not uncertain future, but in fact a certain future of more diversity in the metadata that we needed to deal with. And it's interesting to consider that metadata, too. Some of it is very standards-based and very well understood, like MARC records, those sort of things. And then some of it is structured but not well understood, or the standard is not followed very well by folks that might be handing data off to libraries. Or it's semi-structured, and then there's a lot of variability in what you can do within the standard, or it's completely unstandard and proprietary. And we need to deal with all of those kinds of formats, so we need a very flexible data model to do that. So we've been thinking quite a bit of that, and Molly's been leading a team that has generated several scores and scores of pages on the kinds of sources of data and targets of data that we're going to have to deal with. Part of that work was this inventory of target integrations. So a lot of what libraries do is essentially transactional. There are all these business transactions that go on. We're buying material, we're leasing material. There's transfers of cash. There's internal accounting through fund accounting. So we knew we needed some kind of core financial function, and being part of the Kwale Foundation actually offers us a great opportunity of ready-built software. So the Kwale financial system really does many of these kinds of activities that we would need to build otherwise, and we're looking at how we can integrate our workflows with software that is already written. The other advantage of this is certainly if you're a Kwale financial site, this will make it very easy for your library to be integrated into at least the financial workflows of the university. But even if you're not a Kwale site, and Penn is not a Kwale financial site, being able to have one financial system output data for another one is a lot easier than having a non-financial system like a library management system output data for another one. So we think that the integrations will be much easier that way anyway. And there are other enterprise and domain integrations that we need to worry about. So there's identity management, there's however you do interlibrary loan and resource sharing, there's vendor relationships that you have, EDI, all of those sort of things that we need to think about. So we have a growing inventory of what those things are with 8 partners that are diverse in their characteristics. We're hoping that we hit most of the ones that we need to. And we're also developing a process for our functional specifications. So this is a formal kind of approach to how do we document what the specifications are, how do we document for Brad's team so they can turn them into technical specifications, but also when the code comes back, how can we do testing? And we need these functional specs to be able to say, this is what we wanted it to do, this is how we viewed it working, those user stories go into this, and then librarians, subject matter experts can look at this and say, yes, this function is working in the way that we expected it to work. And then securing the development capacity. And as Robert said, we are contracting with a development firm. And one of the reasons that we did this is that when we looked out into what it would take, when we looked at other Qawwali projects and how they seconded programmers and developers, project managers, architects to their projects, we looked into libraries and we said, well, we really don't have a lot of staff like that. We don't have a lot of Java programmers that we can put on these kinds of projects. So what are we going to do? We really needed to think seriously about getting the project done because we're on a short timeline. So contracting out made the best sense. But what it also does is it gives us a heads up on the kinds of skills that we're going to need in the phase after the build as we go into implementation or if we want to do enhancements. I do think that Robert made a really excellent point, though, about the company that we are engaging. We think that they will, as they work with our software and it begins getting built, they really will be able to turn around those modules pretty quickly and that they're going to find a business plan here that provides them an income stream going forward. So that you can imagine groups of libraries getting together and saying, we have a problem, we'd really like a software solution to this, can you help us out? And they'd come back with a set price and a timeline for producing that kind of code that would integrate into the Qawwali framework. And a lot of this is because as we're building Qawwali Olay, we're really making sure that it is a modular, service-oriented system so that you really can think about new services being made available to the core framework and they doing some kind of a workflow that libraries find useful. So it was a competitive RFP process that we went through. We had very good response from the developer community.
We had 15 responses to the RFP.
Which took longer than we thought to weed through all that and get to our final candidate then. So that was a little slowdown on our project timeline, but it was a great problem to have, actually. And so now Molly will talk about leadership.
Yeah. So how many folks here work in libraries? Okay.
Woo-hoo.
All right, a home crowd.
So, you know, when you hear the word library, you think change. The whole lot of change. So this change is challenging for libraries for very good reason, mostly because of our commitment to forever. So when the winds of change blow hard enough, the most trivial things can turn into deadly projectiles. We're facing challenges around change, mostly because what we're trying to do with this system is to do a strategic change, but we, of necessity, have to look at the tactics. We have to look at what people are actually doing and then reconceptualize that into a new model. So it's very hard to lead a revolution from within. And the only way I think you can do that is by pushing back, asking questions, soliciting outside experts and consultants. This is, if we just look at our workflow and think about ways to change it slightly, we're just going to tweak what we already have, or we're going to reverse engineer our current systems. So we can't do that. That's not the point of this project. So when you, and because also I should say, this is an IT project and a library project. When you think about IT staff and technical services staff in libraries, if you've worked with tech services staff, and I manage both those operations, these are people who, for issues of scale and workflow, are paramount. So when you ask somebody, what would you like to see in a new system, they'll say something like, no mouse, just keyboard commands. I just can't stand the mouse. If I have to click on anything, that's a waste of my time. They will count keystrokes. And, you know, one keystroke will save them, you know, an hour a year. It's a lot like working with system administrators for whom, if you work in the IT realm, from whom any change represents a new thing they're going to have to maintain, configure, support. So the concern around change is important, but it's a challenge for us. All right. So one of the things we're doing is collecting user stories. The idea is you hear what people do, and then you build a workflow. And we're getting thousands of user stories. And this is an example of some of the user stories we get. And if you look on the right, here are the user stories. I encumber funds for Kindles. I encumber funds for subject-specific research. I encumber funds that are for books on a grant. I encumber funds for books for reserve. I encumber funds for titles requested for ILL. And right now in the library, those are all different processes. What is the actual core activity here? It's I encumber funds to buy stuff. But how people are doing today may actually differ according to the system. And it's very hard when you're looking at this to say, you know what, I know you do it that way now, but the core activity here is the encumbrance of funds. And the other stuff you do is context. That context is going to be core to another process. So we do a lot of like parking lot. Okay, we got it, we're going to put it over here, and now we're going to focus on this atomic level. So this leads to a little activity that I call workflow or workaround, and understanding when is something actually an activity that we need to support, and when is a workaround around a system problem that we actually have. So the first one, creating a fund for a specific format in order to enable reporting on that format. We create a fund code for Kindles so that when we want to know how many Kindles we buy, we can just report on that fund code. The actual money is coming from the same fund as all of our collections. That is a workaround. That's a workaround because we don't have a reporting system that allows us to report on format in the way that we need it to. The next bullet, import files from bibliographic utility and local and add local holdings. That's a workflow. That's what people do. We're going to be doing this. It's pretty straightforward. Third one, create multiple invoices to track funds within the library system and in the university procurement system. We use our library system to manage our invoices, though we also need to add them to the procurement system to get paid. This is what we know as a shadow database. Why are we doing this? And there's good reason that we're doing this, but we don't want to design a system that enables that any more than is necessary. And you know, these it's also about changing your culture. This is something that works right now. It works for people. And we're not offering them something else at this moment. We're just trying to understand what people really need to do and what is going to require another approach. So one of the ideas is using tags around items we purchase rather than fund codes in order to designate attributes of those items. Okay, technical direction. As Mike mentioned, I'm co-chair with Tim McGeary from Lehigh of the data model team, and we get into sometimes heated arguments about what is our standard. And in libraries, they use the word standards in a kind of interesting way, I think. Like, we have the MARC record. Oh, but we don't like it, so we have another standard for this. And there are all kinds of data formats that we are having to consider. And I think the only thing we know, as Mike said, is that we're going to have to support all of these and the stuff that we don't know about or that's still being developed. So what we're looking at is not a system where all the data is stored in this one particular, you know, record format or one particular template. We're going to have to build a system that if you say, I want Dublin Core, I need RDA, I need some MARC and this, that can output to those different formats and that can take records in those formats and store them in a way that will allow manipulation. So that's going to be key to this system, and we'll make this fun, I think. It's good times.
It's good times.
All right, so now we're going to talk about actually working this project from our campus perspective.
So this is the campus perspectives part of the show, so I got to put on my other hat. For Indiana University, not so much the national Olay team, but talk a little bit about why Olay is important for IU. Both there's the library component, you know, in terms of running the system for all of our nine campuses,
And having been at IU a couple of years, I've already seen the good idea about Molly's slide, workflow or workaround. I could put up one called workflow or workaround, and it wouldn't have to do with library technical services. It would have to do with automation on a back end and an enterprise system between multiple different systems to make things work for the 9 campuses that we support with our library system. And believe me, everyone I'd put up there, that, you know, there'd be no wrong answer. It'd all be a workaround, a major workaround that took, you know, close to 10 years to get in an automated fashion. And it took a good year to move from an older Unix platform into a Linux platform over the last year as we moved to our new virtualized data center. But just a little more importance about community source at IU. One of the things that I think everyone here should look at is our IU IT strategic plan. And that was developed over the course of the 2008-2009 year. And we have it up at ep.iu.edu. That's the title of it, Empowering People. And if you could take a look at action item 70, we actually have our plans for the action items now in there. And the one for this one is buried under 70 in 70A. And it's called IT-enabled research. But if you go look there, not only do you see research that brings forward software that runs on things like Big Red or that enables mass storage in our HPSS system, it also shows the administrative systems and the academic systems that we're putting funding into and that, you know, are all community source projects. There's a long list of them. It includes things like Sakai, and it includes things like Quali Finance and Quali Olay. And now we've signed on as a partner with Quali Student last May. And so it's just an interesting thing to take a look at, and it's one of the things driving us is every time we look at a big, a big software type of contract, as that contract comes up, we look at it and go, is there a community source options that's out there that we could invest in, that we could put up for our entire system? And if there is, you know, why aren't we doing that? And there could be good reasons why. We definitely have systems that are system-wide, like our new customer relationship management system. It is not community source. It's a very big vended product. But there was a reason for going in that direction, and there was a reason to get it for the whole system and everybody who wanted it in the system versus just buying it for, say, the folks, you know, who handle your foundation, right? So anyway, it's something to think about. And just a little bit more on what I've seen at IU in terms of community source and what I see with all of our Quali products and what they've done, you know, for IT as a whole at IU. They've really created both short and long-term professional development opportunities for IU staff, both in terms of serving as stepping up and being project managers for different things, being functional council leads, even being leads on subject matter expert teams and technical council subject matter expert teams. And it's given folks the opportunity who might have been really good developers for a long time to really become a lead developer on an application suite and step up to the plate and get the leadership skills they need to move to the next level, whether it's at IU, whether it's at a school outside of IU. That's the important thing to be able to offer those opportunities. And I see that there, whereas with a lot of our vended products, especially from the library side, you know, that really don't offer people new skills. It just offers them a way to maintain very old skills and not use them in new ways. That does not give growth opportunities. You know, that shuts somebody in, and if they stay there long enough working on that, it kind of shuts them off from where everything else is going, right? So those are just two, you know, kind of perspectives I wanted to put out there, because I wear a couple different hats around this at IU. One is working with the national group at that level. The other is working with the system group on eventually taking a look at how we move to Olay from our current system. And the other piece is the local piece for Bloomington, which is a pretty complex operation just with those libraries in Bloomington, how that group will make that shift as well. So just a few things to think about there in terms of community source and making that move. And one more question before I move to the Duke perspective is how many folks had heard of the Quali Foundation before today? Well, that's really, really, really good. Did you learn a lot more about what I talked in terms of the foundation today? Did it make sense to you how it's operating? Yeah? All right, great. And with that, we'll get Duke's perspective.
Okay. So at Duke, working on this project, we haven't had a history of community source development at Duke, or not on this scale. And so this working on this project is a chance for us to
promote the library as a leader in information technology on campus, and that's a change for us. It also enables us to build a partnership with Central IT around a new project. There's no real history here, and that's helpful. It's a staff development opportunity, and I think most important, it models change in a community often viewed as rigid. The more we're accustomed to questioning what we do and to trying out new ideas, the better we will be to react to change in the future and to actually lead change within our organization. So this whole process is actually probably, I mean, I would say the process itself might help transform our transactions as much as the system. And in fact, the system will be an evolving tool, and so it's likely that what we get for the first year out isn't going to be anywhere near what we want it to be or what we will expect in year 5 or year 10. And so it's really important that we get the process right, because that's what's going to drive the long-term success. So at Duke, it's been a lot of fun, but also raised some concern. Will I have a job? If you're going to automate everything, I check in periodicals. What's my role? And these are important questions, and it's hard to answer them. We don't really know yet. We just have to work together and take it on faith that we're all acting out of the same goals and with the same interest.
All right, so it's great to go last after everybody says why are they in it? And it's like, so we're in it for many of the same reasons. Yeah. But just to give you the perspective that we have at Penn, so this is not something that typically we would do at Penn either. And going into this partnership was something of a risk and one that we considered very carefully. I work at a large Ivy League institution that's been around over 250 years. We can afford to sit it out many times. We'll still be here. So getting involved really had to have some value propositions to the university, and we worked very hard to make sure that the university understood what the risks were, but what the opportunities were here as well. So to just repeat some of what Robert and Molly have said, we really wanted to have that direct involvement in this. Our experience with our vendors previously has not been one where we can typically advance the product in ways that we think it should be, or to meet specific needs that the University of Pennsylvania has. So one of the favorite things I have when I deal with vendors is when they say, you're a big R1 library. What do you think about being in a development partnership with this? And I used to think that was great, and then I found out what that really meant, which was nothing, that they really didn't involve you in the development process very well. You just became testers for whatever software they were going to spit out anyway. So we wanted to move away from that and get into a more substantial, substantive environment where our contributions really could be seen in the product that came out. Additionally, it is a great opportunity for staff advancement. We can build skills into the staff, into the library that doesn't currently exist. And it's not just these technical skills. It is definitely those process management skills, new ways of thinking about the work that you do, new ways of characterizing it and expressing it, and new ways of evaluating what's important and what's not important. It also gave us experience at the enterprise level, which is something that we've tried very hard at Penn to move to that level, to be considered, to get a seat at the table, so to speak. And here we are now beginning to do development of a system that integrates in very interesting ways, in ways that are familiar to those enterprise level system managers. So it's more attractive to them, and they're beginning to talk to us more about this. Mixing it how we want. I mean, really getting the stuff that we need. Everything at University of Pennsylvania, we were founded by Ben Franklin, so everything is either named after Ben or Franklin. So our financial system is Ben Financials, ha-ha. which is a homegrown system, and you know, integrating it is going to be interesting with any system that we have, but we think that we're going to have an easier time with Kowali Olay. We have a discovery system. Many people are now layering discovery systems over their existing catalogs. We made an early decision in Kowali Olay not to create a user interface, an in-user interface, because there were great options out there already. And additionally, we knew that in the time that we were building this software, many of our potential implementers would have put lots of work into bringing those systems up, and we didn't want to mandate that they had to change to another system. So those local integrations are important as well, and more collaborations with people on campus because of that. We knew that if we went out and went by ourselves, we'd never be able to sustain the software. There's just no way you can bring the intensity necessary to develop software and then to manage it over time with a single institution. We just couldn't see how we could pull those kinds of resources together and do all of the other things that they keep asking me to do. So we know that we need the community to sustain the software. And what we found was there was some real benefits there as well beyond that initial goal, which was you start finding common interests with your partners and with people that you're talking to. So there are opportunities growing out of this opportunity as well, because you're rubbing up against people who are saying, I like what you're doing in that Kowali Olay project, but I wanted to talk to you about this other thing. It seems similar to me. So all of us, I think, have had some experience where there are projects that we're either involved in or projects that we are getting involved in that have grown out of this experience. And then linking things together, really just looking at new ways of doing our business. Management of licensed content doesn't necessarily have to be done at a local institution level. Several of our partners are responsible for system-wide services, and we really are looking at Kowali Olay as something that can scale large but also scale small. So that small institutions can implement it, but what we're really hoping is that what we find is that there's some aggregate services out there that can benefit the library community, and management of the licensed content certainly could be one of them. Courseware integration is very important. The technologies that we're looking at are very consistent with courseware systems that are on the market now that you're probably using at your institution, so we think that that integration will be a bit easier as well. At Penn, we run the courseware system, the primary courseware system for the university, so this has particular relevance to me because I have a whole FTE that does nothing but try to integrate Blackboard with all of the data flows that are out there in the world, and our resource base is one of them. And then finally, building the standards-based framework provides this platform. So when we talk about having that programming resource out there that we've contracted with, who will be able to, even after the build, continue to provide services for developing software will be important, because we now have a platform that really is an application development environment for library solutions, for solutions to problems that we might have. So with that, we'll thank you for your attention and open it up for any questions you might have. So the question is, will Olay be designed to support multiple institutions, multi-tenant kind of environments? Is that a good characterization? So yes, it will. I mean, it will need to be, because at least two of our partners are running in that kind of environment, and we'll need to be able to provide services for more than one campus through this service. Additionally, the way we're building in this service-oriented model, it should be able to be hosted in some kind of a software-as-a-service environment, and we're looking pretty hard at that. And, in fact, our developer has good experience with developing software in that model. So the question is, are we looking at bringing in public libraries? And K through 12. Not at this time. The software in a community source environment is certainly available as it becomes available, would be available to those communities. Under the funding that we got from Mellon, our focus is on research and academic libraries. We also believe that there are some peculiarities about workflows in those environments that may not be replicable in public or K through 12 environments. So we may not be the best choice for them anyway. Thank you.
However, that being said, I mean, we'd love to have a partner, you know, step forward, put some, you know, contributions in and work with us on that. It, you know, we were working with some partners from Canada, and, you know, that we were trying to get them in on the build project. And, you know, their question always was, well, are you going to do a, you know, a French version of this? And I said, I'd love to do a French version of this. Are you going to be a partner?
I just want to note that we are over our time. We'd like to hang out and answer questions, but I also want to let those of you who are waiting feel comfortable leaving, and we'll be up front.
They're all leaving.
Well, we're over time. We're like 7 minutes
we
over.
We ran over. There's one more. There's another question. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.